This podcast contains explicit language.
A note to our three listeners. We are currently having some mic issue. We recorded this at Dave's, and his mic is, let's just say, it's past its prime just a little bit, so you might hear a little audio artifacting here and there. Apologies and enjoy.
Hi.
Hello.
This was an excellent episode.
And we're done.
We should do this again sometime.
That's a wrap.
Two Fat Guys Talk Games, episode 7, done! Meanwhile, 50 minutes ago... This is Carlos.
And this is Dave.
Two Fat Guys Talk Games.
Sounds good. Our topic today is the first person... Well, I guess we're not going to go into that argument again. The Corridor Shooter.
Indeed. Doom. Gears of War. Halo.
Resident Evil. Half-Life. Alien vs. Predator. Basically everything from the days of the MUDs all the way up to today's Halo 3, Halo 4 era.
Excellent.
Carlos, what up?
I love classic Doom. I like it because it is a great example of old game design I loved. Levels structured around your specific abilities. Very clear goals in mind. Easy to get into. Difficult to master. Very well-made game. As opposed to a lot of today's first-person shooters that I feel follow the corridor cutscene model, where it's one hallway, cutscene, another hallway, cutscene. And the very closely related hallway, room, hallway, room, hallway, room. You don't see something like Doom 1, Episode 1, Map 4, where it's a big webbed level that's great for deathmatch and for the single-player experience. There are games like that still. I hear Serious Sam is like that. I need to play those games.
I know you didn't play as much Half-Life, which is really, I would say, the game that brought it into the next generation.
Yeah, Half-Life is really the one that started the seamless level, fluid narration, compelling chapter kind of subtitle thing going. I did play quite a big chunk of Half-Life and a little bit of Half-Life 2. Though my favorite first-person shooters from Valve were the Portal games, by and far.
Fair enough.
I do think that first-person shooters get a bum rap. There's a lot of negative sentiment towards them, especially amongst the more Japanese-loving gamer, the movie bobs of the world, if you will. And they tend to view first-person shooters as like this dearth of creativity, this black hole. But there are a wide variety of game types you can do with that. You can do puzzle shooters like Portal, and you can do platformer shooters like Metroid Prime. There's quite a bit there.
I agree. I don't really agree with the whole just narrowing it down to Japanese players. I mean, we all have our different sentiments as far as what makes a good shooter. Myself, I like the Halo games. I like the multiplayer aspect of them, not so much the online multiplayer, just the co-op scenarios.
Just to clarify, I don't mean Japanese players. I mean the player who they kind of view Japanese games as the creme de la creme, and they kind of go, look at all these American games. They're all first-person shooters, and they're all brown and terrible. That's kind of what I meant.
Fair enough.
Please go on.
We all have our love for different games. Myself, I don't like the Call of Duty games. I don't like Modern Warfare. I like my games with a little bit of sci-fi. So I like Halo. I like Half-Life. Valve, Half-Life 3, bring it out, bitches. I like Deus Ex. I like my games to have storyline to it. But I think you are right. Some games take the whole cutscene a little bit too far. Halo doesn't really. Almost gets to the point where it's like, okay, can we get on with the game? But not enough that it has really bugged me. Half-Life 2 didn't really have too much of that. That was more of a end-of-level reward or major event sort of thing. Same thing with Deus Ex. You got cutscenes actually pretty rarely that you weren't actually involved in doing something. So those, actually all the games we talked about are first-person shooters. There is the second-person shooter I just today learned exists called Zato.
Zato on Kongregate.com. Free to play. Try it out.
Which is interesting. Don't get me wrong. I didn't realize they'd actually done a game like that.
You basically see from the perspective of the enemies, making it
like... And then
like,
move your character to shoot while you're looking down their sights. Interesting. Give it a try. It's kind of cool. We also have a lot of third-person shooters. Gears of War, even games as early as Tomb Raider, which can be considered third-person shooters, absolutely. They're more of an adventure game, but in the end, it is a third-person shooter.
Resident Evil 4 and 5 were definitely that mold.
Can we just forget 5 existed?
It was still when I played the demo.
No. It was a game. It wasn't a good game.
What I mean is, when I played the demo of it, it had a very Gears of War-esque, over-the-shoulder kind of look to it.
Yes, and 4 did that, but it did it right. I've never played a game where the first impression of a character was, I want this character to die and no longer hope. And I mean, ultimately, Resident Evil 5 was a shame, because especially after falling in Resident Evil 4's very big shoes to fill, that was really a surprise hit for a lot of us, in that it took the Resident Evil formula, threw it on its side, says we're gonna fix the inventory system, we're going to fix a lot of things, and oh yeah, it's still the third person. This game rocked. I remember playing it originally on the GameCube, and I still have to buy it on the PS3 because it's worth it. I know you can't talk too much about it.
I did play some of the earlier Resident Evil games, like 2 and 3. And I will say, I'm not sure what Capcom was thinking, giving you such a sluggish control scheme when they're asking you to run from armies of zombies.
Well, okay, but it's not just the sluggishness of the controls. Let's also go along with Capcom's insane habit of very poor camera schemes.
Yeah.
I know, Spoony did this fantastic in one of his skits, where he goes up and all of a sudden he smacks his head on the left.
Yes.
And camera points have been, or bad camera controls have been a major problem in a lot of games. I'm picking on Capcom on this, but everybody's had a little bit of problem here and there, just Capcom doesn't learn.
Even Mario has had camera troubles with their games.
No kidding.
The Mario Galaxies really, really did it right by just taking the camera control away from you most of the time,
yeah,
but positioning it in such a way that it's where you need it. Mario not being one of the games, the genres we're talking about, but an example of camera.
Yeah, that is a third-person game, but we're sticking to shooters today.
When you get a fire flower, I'm joking. Please continue.
Yeah, technically you're right, but fuck off. So, I definitely agree that it's what brought shooters into the limelight. All of a sudden, we had this badass shooter with awesome music. Even by today's standards, it still has some awesome music.
I think Doom 2's music and their pixely enemy design and aesthetic is aesthetically more pleasing than Doom 3 and than a lot of modern games. The fantasy monster look of old Doom is way cooler than the
ultra-realistic, horrific
mutant look of today.
I do agree with you. Doom 3, I finished Doom 3. And that only with cheat codes because I just got so sick and tired of they had the formula in that guy where I'm gonna give you 5 shotgun shells, I'm gonna give you 50 enemies to kill. There was no payoff and the game was just too bloody boring and long. They did some good things there where they started to add in a little bit of story and everything else. And then you got into the actual shooter part of the game, and they threw most of that to the side. So yes, I agree, Doom 4 should be a lot more like Half-Life.
I think it should be a lot more like Doom 2. I think Doom 3 was trying to be like Half-Life.
And they failed very badly.
Yes, but Doom didn't need to be like Half-Life. I wrote an article about this on Bitmob. I seem to have written an article on Bitmob about everything we talked about.
Yeah.
But Classic Doom is really not like a lot of the games it spawned. Like, you could argue Half-Life is a product of Classic Doom, but a variation of it. Similarly, you could argue that Bastion is a variation of Zelda, or that Mega Man is a variation of Mario, right?
Yeah, but that's not fair to anyone, really.
But, you know, these kind of came from an origin point. And Doom, when they were set down to make Doom 3, instead of embracing what Doom was about, they kind of looked at Half-Life and they were like, we want to make our game like Half-Life. And that's what Doom 3, like that's where Doom 3 came into play. Even if it was really well made, I don't know if I'd enjoy it. I don't know if I'd have enjoyed it nearly as much as the classic Doom games. I don't think because it's not capturing that for me. It's not doing that. One man who runs faster than Sonic the freaking Hedgehog, needing to use agility and superior firepower to take down armies of demons. I think I get more out of that out of your average Dynasty Warriors game than I get out of Doom 3. I'm not even kidding, either.
And coming from me to that, that's pretty bad, seeing as the only Dynasty Warriors game you really liked was Dynasty Warriors Gundam.
I did like some of the older ones that we played multiplayer. They were never anything I'd buy, but still.
Okay, fair enough.
That gives me more of a classic Doom vibe than Doom 3.
And then there was Duke Nukem 3D, which we both played to death.
I liked Duke 3D, but I liked more of the custom competitive maps than I liked the campaign proper. Because I felt the controls in the engine were not the problem, but the level design, it's like, what's the company that made that at the time? 3D Realms, is that right? I think they were trying to show just how awesome Build was. So they're like, let's make a city in Build. Awesome. But they forgot that the reason a game like Doom or even Wolfenstein worked is not because their structures were realistic in any way, it's because they float. There's an intuitive flow, a way that guided the player towards the various keys and objectives to take them to the various locked doors and to reach the end, right? But Duke Nukem had a great engine, and the custom levels for that game were great for Duke Nukem 3D.
Just to let anybody listening to this know, we used to have matches on some of the custom maps that we had dug up, where it would be best of five, and we would end the match at -2, -3.
Yes.
Because we used to set up elaborate traps and everything else to get each other, and multiplayer, that game was quite fun. I really wish that they would do another in its like that's not Duke Nukem Forever.
I think
Duke Nukem Forever is a good example of how the times have changed. Anybody who's played Duke Nukem Forever, you can literally watch the changes in the development cycle. Because you go from lighthearted, dark, claustrophobic to, ultimately Duke Nukem Forever was a giant joke.
You're gonna laugh at me. You're gonna laugh at what I'm about to
say.
Oh,
probably. I do that all the time.
Duke Nukem Forever should have been Dynasty Warriors with guns.
I'll give you that. It would have been sold better.
Hundreds and hundreds of monsters and Duke just solo plowing through them and having a good time doing it.
Ultimately, you're talking more of a...
Because Duke Nukem 3D...
more of a Devil May Cry.
Duke Nukem 3D definitely owes more to Doom than to the modern
Absolutely.
Type of shooter. And Duke Nukem he should embrace his Doom Guy lineage. Because we all know it's from the same family tree, right? Mm. He should embrace that lineage. And Duke should be that serious Sam-esque, crazy shoot-em-up. It should be like, that's a funny thing, shoot-em-up is reserved for games like Jamestown or like Raiden, popular in Japan, the one-hit.
1942.
The one-hit kill Japanese shooter. But in a lot of ways, Doom had a lot in common with a shoot-em-up. And I think that's what Duke 3D should be and what the next Doom should be. They should be like first-person shoot-em-ups almost. Just give me some guns. And give me crazy fun to be had shooting lots and lots of enemies where the ingenuity of the game is how you're going to manage these large groups of enemies. Gears of War, really well made game. It gets a lot of flack for being brown and having muscle heads. Really well made game. Really strong encounter design. You know that Ego Raptor video where he praises Mega Man? Gears of War does a lot of the same things. It introduces individual elements, and then it combines those elements later, and you have to use what you've learned, right? Even though it follows the hallway room thing, that game is more about its encounters. It's almost more like Final Fantasy Tactics, where it's a narrow road that leads to a battle, and then another narrow road. It's less about exploring a map.
I'm not going to argue with on that, because especially on the co-op, we had a lot of fun with Gears of War. We also had a lot of fun with Halo.
What are your thoughts on Halo 4? I have an ulterior motive to ask you. My foot fell asleep and I need to reposition in a way that's far away from the mic. So, talk for a while.
And here he is, just sort of rotating his foot back and forth. Anyway, Halo 4. I'm looking forward to it. I think that the new studio has very big shoes to fill. I mean, Bungie was as close as you can get to perfectionist as far as what was going on as you can get in the shooter realm.
You don't know the half of it. Did you ever read, I'm talking a bit louder so the mic grabs me. Did you ever read that Wired article where it talked about Bungie's QA process.
Yes.
Yeah, man, this is, for anyone who doesn't know, the long story short version, they have servers that basically track where every tester has died, and they map the concentrations of where people are dying in levels, so they can find out where things need to be more finely tuned, which is a boss way to design games.
Absolutely.
Go on.
I want to know what happens in the next part of the story. Now that they have officially, and I'm going to go really geeky here on this, but now that with Reach, wait, what was the last one? Was it Reach?
Reach was the very last Halo
game. So with Reach, they finally broke the link between the books and the games. Unfortunately, I was sad to actually see that happen. However, now we've got a little bit of a blank slate for the future, whereas that slate was a little bit less grayscale when it came to the books. We knew some stuff were going on. We knew that there were more Spartans still alive. A whole bunch of things we knew existed. Now, we don't know shit. So kind of cool, kind of disappointing. I think they're going to do well. They've redesigned Master Chief's armor a little bit. I don't mind that. It doesn't have to be the same armor every time. Just as long as they tell us why it happened. Did you get rid of some of it because you got an upgrade? Give us some story. They recently released some new pictures of Cortana. And in every game, Cortana gets more realistic and more eye candy-ish. That part I don't like.
I tend to masturbate to Cortana more frequently with every Halo
game. Oh, Jesus. Okay, that's going to make it in the video. Or should I say into the audio? God help us.
Hopefully we'll cut this out in editing.
No, because you did the editing. I know you won't. Ultimately, I'm afraid that that's one thing that they're doing that's stupid. I mean, Cortana's more of a... She should be more of an in-your-mind, talking-to-you sort of personality, more than a visual, hey, I'm the hot chick substitute for a girlfriend you'll ever have.
One thing they're doing is they're keeping in continuity with that Halo anime and showing that Cortana is slowly entering rampancy, which is that universe's version of AI is going nuts.
Kind of hoping, I've read some things online here recently, that that might be the ultimate goal for Master Chief in Halo 4.
To fix Cortana?
Is to fix Cortana. And actually, that is a damn good idea.
How much you want to bet they're going to pull a James Cameron Avatar and stick her in a blue body? A very sexy body.
But that wouldn't help. Literally, and again, going really into geek here, Cortana is an AI that was... See, I can't tell how much they actually changed this part via Reach. Whether in the game storyline now, Cortana is a AI made by the Forerunners and adapted to humanity. In the books, she was actually a duplicate based off of a clone brain of Dr. Halsey, the Dr. Fine, Dr. Reach, the one that knew all the Spartans. Based on that, she has a 7-year life cycle. She shortened her time by downloading all the information off of the first game. Then all the damage that Gravemind did to her, as well as a bunch of stuff that happened between the games that we've never seen the effects of in the games, etc., etc. In the end, she is slowly going down. I would like to see that be a primary goal of John, because he needs a little bit more personality for the next set of games. There's no longer this big overarching threat. We need something to motivate John, and Cortana is that.
I kind of want to see his face more. We've definitely veered into a storytelling side of first-person shooters with Halo, but I kind of want to see his face. You know,
it's definitely progression. We've gone from Halo 1, where the storyline was very base.
With one big plot twist,
well,
and then very basic.
Granted, with a big plot twist, but I mean, we got the story in that one more from the people you ran into around you, and Cortana talking to you, and Guilty Spark, etc. Characters around you. In Halo 2 and Halo 3, we became more involved, at least storyline-wise, in setting our destiny. We didn't make decisions, but the storyline was the couple people around you, not just people you were running into. So you seemed to have more scripted effect on what was going on.
I don't know. I never got struck. Halo never struck me as the game that really showed me what my Avatar was going through, except for in Halo 2 with the Arbiter. Part of the reason I really like the Arbiter is because he had a story. He was a character. I could see his face. I could see his motivations. I could see what he's fighting for. Damn shame that he was so underused in Halo 3, because every time he talked, it was gold. I love the Arbiter. My favorite character from that whole series.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I big nerdy time. I kind of wanted them to make a Halo side story game where it would have been more of a run and hack and slash with the Arbiter and an energy sword.
I'm sure games like that have been done in Flash games. But
that's the kind of game I wish Dirge of Cerberus was, because I never thought Vincent was really big gun guy. Like, he had a multitude of abilities. I almost thought that should have been a behind-the-shoulder God of War-esque action game instead of the first-person shooter it was. Maybe if you were Barrett. Barrett seemed a lot more first-person shooter-y, except he only had one gun. And don't get me wrong, having a Doom chain gun through a whole shooter, well, maybe that wouldn't be so great. On the mechanical side, Halo 4 looks like another Halo game. They're fine. I don't have an issue, but those are really, like some people say, they're social drinkers. I'm a social Halo player. I enjoy Halo with people, not too much by myself. When I play by myself, it's because I'm mildly curious about the narrative.
Okay.
I'm kind of secretly hoping that Halo 4 is a bit faster paced. It's going to sound terrible, but a bit less methodical. I kind of want it to be a little twitchier, a little more hyperactive. And I know people, such as friend of the show Shane, who would hate that, but I would love it.
Yeah, I don't know if it really has a place in the popularity of the Halo games. Maybe in a different one, but in the mainstream ones, not so much.
Halo driving controls. Great driving controls or greatest driving controls for vehicles?
Poor driving controls.
Not poor. But the Halo vehicle controls are
Depends on which game.
All of them.
I hated the driving controls in Halo 1.
They were awesome.
They're still the same, but I felt the vehicles operated like...
It was super intuitive. One stick accelerated, the other stick moved left and right.
Well, the controls themselves are okay, or better than okay. It was more how the vehicles handled.
I always wondered why Gears of War and the other shooters that had vehicular segments didn't control so well. Because every time, like, that segment in Halo 1 where you have to escape the Krill? Were they the Krill?
That was Gears of War.
That was Gears of War 1, and you have to use the UV turret. I was always wondering why this didn't control as well as a simple Halo Mongoose.
That's a great example of very poor storyline sequence, control sequence, and just plain out annoying.
I think there's nothing wrong with having a variety of gameplay styles in a game, but there has to be some logic, some flow behind it. The logic was there.
It's just the controls really, especially if you're playing single player, it was bloody annoying. Two player, you could sort of get things down between the second player nailing the Krill with the lights and then the first person driving. You could nail that down, but in single player, it sucked.
In Halo, I always felt the vehicle controls were very organic because they felt like they were supposed to be part of the game. Kind of like how in Tribes, the vehicle controls were very organic. Even in Gears of War 2, the very last level where you're controlling the Brumac, because he controlled just like the way you controlled when you're controlling your guys in infantry mode. I was going somewhere with this, and I was going to bring a total left field example of a game that has many different genres and unfortunately loses the player, and that's Battletoads. Battletoads is half side-scrolling beat-em-up, half platformer, half vehicular side-scrolling game. And
not at all a first-person or third-person shoot.
I realize, but the reason I'm bringing it up is because it does a lot of different genres, and part of its insane difficulty is that it's kind of confuddling you with what kind of game it is, which means you need to know a lot of different styles to bring to the table. And why I always argue that Battletoads is terribly overrated and not deserving of the love it has. But to bring it back to first-person shooters, if you're going to have something like a driving segment or part of it, it has to be organic. In Halo, it's organic. It's part of the game.
It is.
In Gears of War, it's because they feel the player's getting bored with the main game, which I wasn't, and because they feel you need some kind of change. And except for the Brumac sequence and the admittedly fun Panzer Dragoon-esque flying sequence from the second game, I didn't like them. I wanted to have more solidly designed encounters.
What did you have of the sub controls in part 3?
They were okay. I didn't have any big grievance with them, but when the section ended, I didn't miss it.
Okay. Half-Life 2, you played a little bit of?
I'll say this about Half-Life. Even though the Half-Life games aren't really my cup of tea for first-person shooters, they're extraordinarily well made. And they're definitely way better than, you know, a part of the reason I'm not a big fan of Call of Duty and Army of Two and other games where it's in a more real-world setting is because it seems terribly unimaginative. And maybe that's a terrible thing to say about a game that's set in the real world, but I've played games set in the real world that I've enjoyed, and it just doesn't happen to be a military-based shooter, or a mercenary-based shooter, I guess.
Fair enough. More recent FPSs that I've played, or even third-party, would be things like Red Dead Redemption. Two of my favorite is Bioshock 2. Recently played the new Deus Ex. Fantastic game. They're making a lot of good games, but they're also a lot of real big turkeys as well.
I kind of want to get your input on this, and I was saving this specifically for the podcast instead of asking it before we did it, because I wanted to get your raw input on it. On Serlin's forum, he talked about how it sucks that fighting games with the latest Street Fighter Cross Tekken are moving to a DLC model and a model where you have to grind to get your character's power level up. Mm-hmm. And he talked about how for the longest time, FPSs were kind of a bastion from this trend in games, this trend to sort of grind a meter to get anywhere instead of having a well-designed game in front of you and enjoying that game for what mm-hmm. it is and playing it over and over because it's so well-made. And he talked about how first-person shooters were kind of a bastion for this, and not anymore. You play your latest Call of Duty, and you have to level up your guy.
Well, okay, but there I think Serlin has to look at the big picture. Because Gears of War, there's leveling skills. But it's only for the multiplayer.
And that's a problem, I think. When I first saw that you could level up fortifications and stuff, I thought there were going to be levels in every game. So you started every game at level 1, and as you went through the waves, you gained levels in that, so you would obviously gain them faster mm-hmm. than the final product. I didn't think they were going to carry over, so it became an RPG, and that's not what I'm looking for in my Gears of War experience. Halo Reach handled this very well. You can grind out your bar, but the only thing you get out of it are aesthetic rewards.
Okay.
Nothing that will impart or take away an advantage. In fact, some of the things you buy can actually put you at a disadvantage, like a giant flaming head everyone can see from 500 paces.
And that's fair enough. I do agree with you that there should have been two different versions of that, of Horde mode there. One, just like you're talking, and the normal mode. But some people would say that we just don't want to put the time into the game. They're wrong.
Yeah, they are wrong. And this is one thing I don't like happening in gaming in general. And FPSs are really embracing this, and I hate it. And that's this need to grind, this need to fill out a bar, and that becomes the game. And like I talked about in the last episode when we had friends on, sometimes I want to grind. I have a guilty pleasure. Sometimes I want to grind, but I don't want to see games moving towards that trend. I really don't. I think we've come to the point where we need a middle of the road solution where first-person shooter makers take the Halo Reach approach and put in a bar you can grind out for aesthetic rewards, weapon skins, stuff like that, or player avatars that don't actually change your performance but make you look cool, like the player skins in Gears of War multiplayer, like the special mechanic mm-hmm. Baird or the Thrashball Cole, for instance. I still want first-person shooters to give you a character that is kind of a whole and complete character with whole and complete mechanics, and ask you to cross the hurdles that they place in front of you with these mechanics. I don't want to ever level up Gordon Freeman. I don't want to ever level up Chell. I don't want to ever level up Doom Guy.
Okay, let me throw one at you.
Go ahead.
Mass Effect.
Mass
Effect is very much a first-person shooter, but you level your character and get new abilities.
I would argue it's more an RPG. It's kind of both. It's kind of like how in Symphony of the Night, that's a platformer, but it has RPG elements, right? But I would argue that Zelda is more RPG with action elements. No, I take that back. That's a bad example.
Very.
the Tales games are RPGs with action elements, yeah, that's a little better, right?
Yeah.
And Mass Effect, BioWare tried to make it an RPG. They give you levels, they give you skill trees to go through.
But is that bad?
I don't think it's necessarily bad, but that experience is, because you, it has its place, right?
Because your exact comment a moment ago is why they put in a story mode, shooter mode, and everything else into Mass Effect 3. For people who just want to go through the game and just basically don't want to make any choices, they've got a shooter mode.
So you can actually play Mass Effect 3 through totally as a shooter.
Yes.
And you can still go through all the cutscenes and stuff.
Yeah.
But you don't have to worry about micromanaging your character.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. Why don't more games do this?
I don't know if it just auto-levels you or whatever else, but yeah, that's what you're doing. I have no intention of doing that because...
Okay, here's my counter.
Half the thing I love about Mass Effect is the character customization, the going onto the Citadel and spending an hour talking to people.
I will admit you had me cornered there for a moment. Here's my counter. That's fine.
Wrong.
Oh, doomed. I'll hang my head in shame.
As you should.
My counter is that game's designed around that. As opposed to a game like a Call of Duty with a leveling bar, where it totally doesn't need to be that. But the whole reason that bar is there is to get you.
And we just had a mic malfunction.
The whole reason the bar is in Mass Effect is because one of the experiences that the creators are trying to give you is the experience of growing and getting new powers and progressing through an RPG-esque story, albeit in a futuristic sci-fi shooter setting. But in, say, a Call of Duty with an experience bar, there's no intent for that. That's not the goal. The goal is not to make you feel more powerful. The goal is to make you have to jump through hoops to play the game more because the developers have no confidence in their product that it'll be able to grab you with what's there.
Okay, well, you pretty much defined part of why I hate Call of Duty and Modern Warfare.
And I just don't want to see Halo 4 do that. If Halo 4 does the Halo Reach thing where it's just aesthetics, no problem. Blur did that too. I really wanted to like Blur, but I hated how the best stuff was locked away from you until you built a bar. But that's a driving game. Maybe we'll talk about that in a future episode.
I don't know. Even Mass Effect 3 made a couple bad decisions on that. The multiplayer aspect of that. That was a tacked on mode to get you to play the game longer, I felt.
And you need to do it to raise your galactic readiness for single player storyline benefits. Not a fan of that at all.
No.
I'm okay with multiplayer perhaps giving you some reward in the single player aspect. In an RPG setting specifically, I'm not okay with that, with it being necessary to make you succeed.
And if this is being listened to by a lot of people, they come back and say, well, you don't have to, you can actually still get the best ending, play it through single player without doing it, but your race is only 50%, etc., until your second playthrough, blah, 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 blah. No. Not an acceptable excuse. It should not have been in there for your readiness level at all.
Maybe if there were alternative ways to raise your readiness, and that was one way.
That would be fine.
I'm okay with that. I have no issue with that. Like,
the problem is you will max your readiness out at 50%,
mm-hmm.
and you can't go any further unless you go multiplayer, and that's stupid.
I'm not cool with that. I've yet to play Mass Effect 3. I'll get to it eventually one day. But that's not a cool system, man. That shouldn't be forced, because some people, you know, I don't agree with Yahtzee on zero punctuation all the time. Because sometimes I think he makes very poor arguments that he contradicts himself with in later episodes. But I do agree with him with one thing. Unless you're going specifically into a multiplayer game, like an MMO or something, you shouldn't have to go into the multiplayer to enjoy an experience. Mass Effect especially, this RPG, should be entirely enjoyable without ever, ever playing with another person, should you choose. It's nice that the option's there. It shouldn't force you, I don't think.
I agree completely.
And I want to segue this into, and I might write a big Marb article about this. You might motivate me.
Yeah, you've written enough crap.
First-person shooter, the genre is very flexible. You can have single-player adventure storytelling experiences.
Tomb Raider?
Yes, Tomb Raider is one. The shock games like BioShock and System Shock, definitely those kinds of games as well.
Yep.
You can have multiplayer scenarios that are purely multiplayer, like tribes, which is meant for groups of people.
Which, let's segue this for a second there. Tribes, the original, was fucking awesome.
Come back to that in a moment. You can have combined experiences where, you know, strong single player game modes with inherent mechanics and levels inherent to good multiplayer play, like a lot of the original classic Doom levels and classic Doom itself. First person shooting, kind of like platforming, is a very flexible genre. And when I hear people lament the fact that many, here's that term again, Western games, I hate that term because people use it as an insult and I hate that. When people lament the fact that a lot of Western games are first-person shooters, I think the real crime is that we're not using first-person shooters in all of their potential, all their flexibility. We can have puzzle shooters like Portal or certain Doom maps, like one very cool Doom map where you had to make it through a level without ever alerting a cyber unit. And there were like 50 maps like this. It was about careful movement, right? There are the RPG aspects, like what Ion Storm tried to do with Daikatana. They wanted to do a JRPG in first-person shooter format. They failed. But how cool would it be to have Chrono Trigger adapted to a first-person shooter format, designed really well?
That's a pretty tall order.
It's a tall order. I would love to play that game. First-person shooter, the first-person corridor genre, or third-person, or second-person, as that second-person shooter Zato you just played. Very flexible. Very lending itself towards a wide variety of games. And I would love for designers from all over the world, North America, Japan, Dubai, to touch on the first-person shooter and to really flesh out this potential. I want to see loads of great first-person shooter titles that are so unique that we need to sub-genre them out now.
Fair enough. I mean, ultimately, the reason why we did first-person, third-person, second-person shooters on this is to try and narrow down the list of games. So we just went with first-person and third-person games. We have to start adding in games like Skyrim. Ultimately, depending on how you play those games, I mean, technically Skyrim could be considered a third-person shooter to a first-person, depending on which aspect you play, just like the Fallout games. Technically, they fall in there, but much like...
What I would argue is that those seem to be more RPG than shooter, whereas something like Heretic or Hexen is more shooter than RPG, despite the fantasy trapping of it. Holy crap, Hexen. Why don't we go back to some of those classics?
Let's start into the old stuff.
Let's start with Tribes. You were talking about Tribes.
Tribes was an amazing piece of programming by a company that no longer exists, Sierra. And this is a shame, because they actually had a lot of good games, the King's Quest and Space Quest games, the adventure games.
The horribly underrated Diablo 1 expansion Hellfire, the box of which I'm looking at your shelf right now.
Yes, I kept that around because most people don't actually admit it even exists or didn't know.
Sierra actually published the first Half-Life, as I recall. Like, Valve made it, but Sierra published it, I think.
I don't know.
I could be wrong on that. Anywho, that's not terribly important.
but Starseed Tribes, I bought for a real cheap price at my local London Drugs, and I was expecting a first-person shooter I could just put into the game and play. And I was actually really pissed off at first that it was a multiplayer online game. We were talking the days of the 26.6 and 33K modems. So...
And what a testament to its amazing coding that you could play it on a 36.6 modem at completely playable speeds.
The code was optimized, and this was something that we have definitely lost in all games now, as developers do not optimize the code to play on all the systems. They do just enough so that it runs, and we see that in lagging games, frame rate drops.
I definitely think first-person shooter developers have the whole netcode thing down. In fact, the guy who makes GGPO netcode, who goes under the alias Ponder, I'm sure you can. I think if you're listening to this, Ponder, if I'm totally wrong, call me on it. I think he actually used that type of first-person shooter rollback when he designed GGPO, and that works really well in a variety of peer-to-peer games. And Skullgirls, the upcoming Skullgirls, which might be out by the time I finish editing and putting this up, uses that. First-person shooters, it's a shame that not every one of them is as good as Tribes that ran on dial-up. But first-person shooters, you gotta give them credit for this. They generally have better netcode than a lot of genres of game out there. At least, maybe it's because of the way they're played, maybe timing windows just aren't quite as important between you, the client, and what you're communicating out on the server level, but they tend to be ahead of the game, I think. Thoughts?
No, I kind of agree. It all depends on the shooter, the system. In general, the ones on the PC tend to have really good online code as long as it's not something tacked on, like the multiplayer in Bioshock 2. Holy fuck, was that bad. Lag was usually, literally, if you saw even a hint of a person down the hallway, you pulled the trigger in the hopes they would die before killing you. It was a tacked-on piece of crap. So if the company cared about multiplayer, even Mass Effect 3's multiplayer, I haven't seen any lag. There's only four people per thing, but it is real-time, very well done.
Do you want to play a game?
No.
Here's the game. We're going to throw curveballs at each other, and the curveball is going to be a game that is technically one of these shooters we're talking about today, that is not the first thing you think of the shooter. Go, throw a curveball at me, and then I'll throw mine at you, and I know what mine is already.
Oh, goody. Blake Stone.
I don't know what that is.
Predecessor to Doom, Wolfenstein, and all the others.
Describe this game.
Blake Stone was a futuristic setting, very much like, say, Duke Nukem. Took place in a, like, you only call a starbase, and had more secrets per level than Doom had in its entirety.
Wow.
We're talking, walk down to the end of the hall, go find the middle panel, secret door, hang a right secret door, hang a left secret door, secret, 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 secret. I mean, looking at ASCII maps, you could have 15 secrets in a single level in a single section. It really was, it was a fun little game. It did remind me very much looking back of Duke Nukem.
What year did this come out?
Oh boy, I'd have to look up dates.
Oh, so it was around Wolfenstein 3D, is that right?
Yeah, it was.
Okay, you're gonna hear some clicking, folks, as we look this up. Shall I sing some background music?
Oh, please, for the love of God, don't.
Okay.
So,
no singing Luna's boat song from Lunar.
No.
Wishing.
Blake Stone, here we go.
That seems.
December 3rd, 1993.
Oh, wow, you're right. That is totally an FPS.
It does use the Wolfenstein 3 game engine.
So
last I checked, in that case, it would have had to have been because it's an enhanced Wolfenstein 3D engine.
Well, that's a curveball.
Yeah, 92. Wolfenstein 3D.
Well, that's a great curveball. I learned something today.
Definitely
looks like a better Wolfenstein from that screenshot.
And it was. It was intriguing. I mean, your life bar was actually shown instead of by a portrait. It was done by a pulse sign.
Yeah, I see that.
Which is kind of cool. You had, I think there were 6 or 8 different types of keys you could get on a level. Mm-hmm. So there was that part. You had a whole bunch of ammo. I might be wrong remembering this, but if I remember correctly, your main weapon couldn't run out of ammo.
Doom was released 1 week after Blake Stone. Aww.
Yeah, there we go.
Bummer. Wow. Well.
But.
I've learned something new today.
And here is one of the unique things about Blake Stone. Had 11 levels. If at any time you wanted to go back to one of the previous levels, you could.
Nice. So it did kind of the hub world thing.
Not even that. It was just a central elevator that you chose what level you were going to go to next, and you couldn't go to some levels without certain keys, etc. But
so Mega Man X-ish.
Mega Man X-ish, but not in the way of, say, Heretic or Hexen, where key 1 would be all the way over in the southeastern quadrant, and the next key would be on the northeastern quadrant. I mean, you didn't have that sort of, it wasn't backtracking, it was, We have more levels, more secrets in that level? Let's go find it. Start at that. So that was cool.
Alright.
Okay, throw your curveball.
A little company called Bulletproof Software made this game, at least I think their name was Bulletproof Software, for the unlikeliest of first-person shooter game systems, the original Game Boy. And this game is Faceball 2000.
I never played it, but I've seen it.
You controlled a face that you could customize, because this game had competitive multiplayer with game link cables. Up to 4 people could compete in an arena. You had one type of gun, which was a little pellet shooter, kind of like Mega Man, if Mega Man was high and only able to shoot one pellet every few seconds. But man, it had a kind of the, it was a corridor shooter on the Game Boy, and it played well, and it had like Mario-esque warps in the levels, different enemy types. They had different kind of behaviors, like one couldn't move but would track you, another would just mindlessly shoot bullets around. The dreaded bouncer enemies would chase you down and bounce. Every time one of them would kill you, it would show their face, and it would say, enemy says, have a nice day. There's an enhanced Super Nintendo port, but it kind of sucked. Your Game Boy original was kind of an out-of-nowhere hit. Very fun game at the time. I think I bought... Friend of the show, Shane, I believe, sold me his copy, and I think I have it at home somewhere.
Okay. Directly related to that, my curveball is the game of that game came from. Descent.
Did Descent come before or after?
PC.
That's not a curveball. That's a great game. I love that game.
No, it's a curveball in the fact that that is what inspired...
Descent?
No. Baseball.
Baseball was inspired by Descent?
Yes.
So someone went like, okay, mining ship and mining planet, totally free roaming. Let's make a face version of Wolfenstein.
Why not?
Okay. But it's not really a curveball. Descent was a popular game.
So?
I guess it is a curveball that I haven't thought about in a while. Okay, fine. Here's another one then. Rise of the Triad.
Heretic, Hexen, Part 1, Part 2. Rise of the Triad was awesome.
Oh, yeah?
All those are awesome.
How about some numbering systems like Heretic, and then Hexen, and then Hexen 2.
And then Heretic,
and then
2.
Heretic 2.
See, in those shooters, we saw how shooters developed. Even more so than Duke Nukem Forever. Because we went from having Heretic and Hexen being still very much Doomish, where you went level to level to level, to the point when we hit Hexen 2 and Heretic 2, those were giant maps where you were searching for certain items to unlock other parts of the map and doing lots of backtracking and everything else. And yeah, I know, the good games, I never finished the later ones, Hexen 2 or Heretic 2, because I got lost and I got... Those were games that needed an eventual, like an oracle or something that you could talk to and say, oh, you want to go somewhere over in this region, not just leave it up to your memory. Heaven forbid if you stop playing the game for a while.
While we're talking about hub worlds like that, Metroid Prime. The Metroid Prime series definitely did first-person shooters.
Yep.
I was not a fan of 2 or 3. We kind of talked about this before the show. The first Metroid Prime... on the GameCube, so I don't have to use waggle controls for it. I love that game to death. Even though it should have used the C-stick to move in a Halo-esque control scheme, that should have been an option. I didn't believe it at the time. Friend of the show, Shane, who I've just name-dropped like 5 times in the show, argued this, and I would argue that it's not really a shooter. It's okay. I was wrong. Sorry, Shane. Great game, though. And it showed that you can take a property that, like a Japanese-developed platformer, exploratory platformer, and make a first-person shooter out of it that feels like Super Metroid. That's one example. I would love to see a competent shooter company make a Mega Man X shooter. I would love to see Epic Games do a Mega Man X third-person shooter where there are intuitive ways that, like, X and Axel can take cover and shoot, and an intuitive melee system for Zero in a kind of a futuristic setting with a whole background political like they were hinting at with X8. It's a flexible genre. And great memories, and I want to see more flexibility out of this genre. I want to see more developers really use this genre and really, really expand it, show the potential, make the haters stop hating, or hate more.
I never finished Metroid Prime 1. I despised partway into the end of 2. It had very poor thought and level, as well as story. 3, though? I know you hit waggle controls, but I thought 3 lent itself very well to the motion controls. I just couldn't get over the fact that there was so much lag going from area to area, and I was getting killed. So, fuck it.
I don't think the whale controls are wrong for a game like that. I just think that they should be optional. Not like a game like Mario Galaxy or Kid Icarus Uprising, which was supposed to be a Wii game and then got ported to a system not made for it.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been a great Wiimote game, but Metroid Prime or any first-person shooter, I feel like that should be an interesting option, but it shouldn't be what I'm locked to. That said, I think the issue with Metroid Prime 2 is not that it controlled well enough, and the guns and stuff were interesting. What the problem with that game was the level design. The level design in Prime was very, very strong. It was tough to get lost. It felt like a cool interconnected world, and it wasn't a hassle to get from place to place. And in Prime 2, it was, because the dark world didn't connect every area. You have to travel between the two worlds back and forth. It did not feel nearly as good as the other Nintendo game that did this, A Link to the Past.
I will argue very heavily, though, that one of the things that I thought that Metroid Prime 1, 2, and 3 did wrong is the fact that every area was cordoned off from every other area, and the enemies respawned so quickly. In a shooter, that doesn't really work.
It really sucks when you enter an area and now there's a Metroid on your face, because you didn't know he was going to spawn there. Oh, and it's a Hunter Metroid, so he takes a little more effort than usual to get the hell off of you.
Agreed. Covered a lot of the old shooters, the new shooters. I mean, we could argue that for some of the new stuff, I mean, yeah, Tomb Raider falls into technically the shooter genre, just like Resident Evil, everything else. So it's
first-person shooters.
That's really first-person shooters.
That's the episode. The future is bright, but I think we're going to run into a lot of rehashing before we get to the true goodness, or recapture some of the old goodness ID Software. Doom 4 better be what Doom 3 should have been.
Agreed.
Halo 4, hopefully it'll be good.
This is Dave.
Oh, we're stopping? Okay. And this is Carlos. We're Two Fat Guys Who Talk Games. And signing off. Beep. Wishing on a dream at Seams Far Off, hoping it'll come today into the star.